Welcome to Boston's Best, a podcast where you go behind the scenes with financial planner Mark Condon as he asks industry-leading experts in and around Boston to talk about their businesses. Mark will find out what sets these companies apart from their competition and how they have risen above the inevitable challenges they have faced along the way to their ultimate success. And now, here's your host, Mark Condon.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome to episode 56 of Boston's Best. The goal of this podcast is to highlight businesses in and around Boston. My guest on today's podcast is Andy Wesby. Andy is the owner, manager, and performer of Young Love and the Thrills. They are a wedding band founded in 2014, and they now have 8 total members. They've toured nationally and internationally with the likes of 311, OAR, and Paramore, just to name a few. Young Love and the Thrills have received numerous awards and have played in over 500 weddings, which is unbelievable. We also talk about how Andy lived all over as he was growing up. He attended Emerson College here in Boston and was planning on going out to Cali after his college stint, but 20 years later, and he's still here in Boston. He started touring in 2010 and eventually became the manager of a band in 2013, rebranded it, and Young Love was born. In 2014, with a blitzkrieg of marketing, they were able to land 37 weddings in their first year. They do roughly 50 each year, with 55 on tap for 2021. In this episode, we talk in depth about the impact COVID had on Young Love in 2020. They could only do 4 weddings in total last year. Weddings are their main business, but they can also do other events like corporate outings, wedding anniversaries, and graduation parties. Andy shares how they market themselves and the misconceptions there are surrounding wedding bands. And be sure to listen to the end as Andy shares advice he'd give to anyone looking to start their own business, what he would tell his 18-year-old self, and how he defines success in any given year. And so, with that introduction, I hope you enjoy this episode of Boston's Best. Good morning. This week we have Andy Wesby. Andy is the owner, manager, performer of Young Love and the Thrills. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you. Thanks for coming on Boston's Best. Excited to have you on.
Yeah, but where's my t-shirt and water bottle? I want the swag, bro.
It's coming. I'll be sure to mail you one.
No, I want the Star Wars route here, just to declare exactly how cool I am. So
you are very cool. Your band is very cool. Before we get into your band itself, give us a little background on you. Are you from Mass? Like, did you grow up around here?
No, I grew up in a family. Both my parents were college professors, so we actually moved a lot. I was born in Costa Rica, lived in Jersey, Indiana, Kentucky, Illinois, New York. And then I came up here for college for a short 4-year stint that lasted 20 years. So I wasn't in college for 20 years. I just stayed here. So it's actually my 20th anniversary of being here this August. So,
oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. So you went out, what school did you go to in Boston?
I went to Emerson. I was a film major there. In fact, that's where I met my best bud, who's the drummer in the group I work with. And we do some other projects together as well.
Oh, nice. I would have guessed having Huddleston and Ramey on here, I would have guessed Berkeley.
Yeah, I wasn't even really doing music as anything other than a hobby until I joined this band in college. And, you know, everything sort of spiraled out of control and it took over.
20 years later, yeah. So obviously music was a passion of yours. How did you get into it becoming more than a hobby?
Well, so we were gigging a lot while I was in college and just playing random shows, but then we started touring and playing a ton of colleges all over the states. We did some tours with bigger bands. We went on the road with OAR. They're kind of forgotten now, but they were big at the time.
They were, yeah.
And that band started to fizzle out, and we were all getting into our late 20s and just wanted to make actual money because it's just so hard to make, you know, decent bread touring and doing original music. So
for sure.
Started up a wedding band just to see how it would go. And that was 2010. And then in 2013, it transitioned. We had a guy removed from the equation. We brought in David Huddleston, who you've brought up as our frontman, changed names, rebranded. And I started running the operation late 2013. But, you know, this wasn't some big master plan. It was just kind of transitioning from trying to turn, you know, the talents we had into something that could actually make real revenue. So that's the way it went. And then, you know, you get sucked into an industry that actually really generates cash. You sort of don't back out of it. So the wedding industry is insane.
Wild,
you know, you've been married, you know, what you're dealing with price tags. Yeah, but it's a good way to supplement a lot of people's incomes. Like all the guys in my group, it's a large portion of each of their incomes. And then obviously as the owner and manager, it's a full-time thing for me because I deal with everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Weddings, babies, and pets. Those three industries will never go out of business. People will spend exorbitant amount of money in those three industries. Like my dog, who is sleeping at my feet right now, he's 13. You know, he's just getting older. If he ever needs anything, I want to spend whatever he needs at this point. I've had him 13 years. Like, so I get it. And then, yeah, the wedding industry, you put the word wedding on anything and it's like 10x the cost.
So yeah. That's exactly what it is. So if you inquired, say about like a Friday night and you said it's like a graduation party or something.
Yeah.
I'd probably be quoting about a third the price. That's not some sort of evil plan. It's just that once we know that we're in that bracket, we know what we're competing against and we'd be undercutting ourselves.
Yeah.
If we didn't offer, you know, the same rates that other people do.
For sure.
At least that's the capitalist in me speaking.
No, I mean, that makes total sense though. Let me just back up a second. What'd you go to college for? Like, was music ever, at least this capacity, was this ever in the back of your mind or did you go to college for something completely different?
Yeah, I went to Emerson as a film major and I was focusing on being like a writer, director, cinematographer, sort of like Steven Soderbergh, where you do everything. And I did an open mic. It's my first week at Emerson. I did an open mic where I just played harmonica with my roommate. And the guys in the band I ended up being in saw me, asked me if I wanted to like do a show with them. So I started performing with them. And for a couple years, like that was my main focus, was just being the best harmonica player I could be, which was a different thing than I think everybody would immediately assume that means. It wasn't folk music. It was like funk, pop funk, sort of jam band. So I was doing stuff with a lot of effects, you know, running the harmonica through an entire pedal board so it didn't sound like a harmonica. And it was, you know, kind of gimmicky, but also people really loved it. So we really played into it. But I came up to Boston with the intention of, you know, being here for 3 years and then going out to LA and doing this LA program they had out there and just, you know, working in the film industry. But by the time I was a senior, we were touring so much that I wanted to see where this would go.
Yeah, that's cool.
And it, just kind of took over.
So how many people are in the band?
So Young Love is built now as an 8-piece. We're a pretty consistent lineup, but that's drums, bass, guitar, keys, saxophone, trumpet, and two singers up front. So, and then we have a full-time sound tech as well. So there's 9 people on pretty much any gig.
Wow.
Especially weddings. I guess sometimes we'll play slightly smaller lineups for clubs, but even then I try to keep it as the exact same lineup just so we can showcase the band and people don't have to use their imaginations, because there's always somebody out to see us who's thinking about hiring us. And I'll lose money on clubs to be able to showcase the band and end up getting a wedding out of it. And it's, you know, it's just an investment in future dates.
Yeah, for sure. So what is your role? What piece do you play in the band?
If you can see the pianos here in my studio, I'm a keyboardist and I do a little bit of singing in this band. And I technically would be called the MD, which is musical director. But I write the set lists. I choose the repertoire. A lot of the time, I'm the one doing the arrangements of whatever medleys we do. And I also, you know, yell at certain band members to like iron their pants. So it's like one part musician, one part camp counselor.
That's fair. So this just came out of all the touring that you did throughout college. So you had no previous experience running a business. Like, so what were some of the early challenges that you had when you created the band? And then when you really wanted to see where it goes with in regards to the wedding business, and what were some of the early successes you had where you knew that you were onto something like pretty special?
Well, it's a pretty good story, but it's also sort of a gossipy story. We took, for the most part, the lineup that at the time was still touring, and we just added a female singer and a different bassist and started playing weddings as a 6-piece, but it was under a different name.
Yeah.
And we did that for 3 years, and the person who was running the business was a nightmare. And he just tanked. He completely tanked the business. We had clients like finding us on Facebook and Instagram and messaging us like, we know you're the keyboardist in the band, or they'd hit up the girl singer and just say, we know you're in this band, but we can't get a hold of your band leader. And are you guys showing up tomorrow? I'm like, what? Wow. What is going on? So I just, everything fell apart. Like he spent more than the money that came in. He was paying more than the contracts were worth. Like he just had no ability to do any of this, and it all came crashing down at once.
Yeah.
So I actually, when we were kind of in a death spiral, jumped in to the cockpit and said, I'll take over. I'll invest a bunch of personal money into rebranding. And we lost all of our dates for 2014 at the end of 2013 because of this conflict with this band leader.
Right.
So we started the very beginning of 2014 with zero weddings. And my goal was to try to get 30 that year. Now, normally weddings book about a year to 14 or 15 months in advance.
Right.
Especially Saturdays. So I was marketing towards a very specific group of people, which are the last minute clientele. Yeah. But there is still a large pool of them. For sure. And so in 2014, I just did like a blitzkrieg attack on the internet and basically hit up every band leader that I knew and said, send me all leads. Cause you're always going to get inquiries for dates that you can't fill because you're already booked.
Right.
You know, and so that's an incentive for them as well, because they'll get a 5% cut or whatever you book the date at. And we ended up booking 37 weddings within that year. And I already knew that the wedding industry was, you know, wasn't going anywhere and that it was lucrative. But once I got to be on both sides of the operation and see exactly how quickly you can go from being nothing to having, you know, a ton of reviews and a ton of clientele that's recommending you, not to mention every time you play a wedding, you have prospective clients there, you know, people that are I'd say probably 50% of the gigs that we end up booking or the contracts that we get come from guests that were at a wedding last year or 2 years ago. Well, not last year, but you know, for the most part, usually a year or two prior, they saw us. And then when they get engaged, they reach out because that's a four hour showcase for them.
Oh, yeah.
And they get to experience the whole thing and know there's no smoke and mirrors. So that's how I got into it. But the initial struggles were wild because we had contract disputes when this other band leader kind of blew up his own spot and blasted all of his clients and said, we've had some personnel changes, but don't worry. Then everybody started researching, realizing, oh, actually 90% of the band is now Young Love and the Thrills.
Yeah.
So they wanted to jump ship on his contracts, which they did.
Yeah.
And we had a really great interaction with the cops at an event where he was so mad that we were playing a wedding that was once his that he called the cops on me.
No way.
I'm serious. So in the middle of a wedding reception, our first year is a July wedding in upstate New York. I go outside. There's a state trooper there. Or no, I think it was a local cop. Yeah. But he was the cruiser. The lights are on. And he said, this guy came into our station saying that he was walking through the neighborhood and saw a trailer that was stolen from him. So, because we haul gear in a trailer, and he points at the trailer. I tell him the whole story. This guy, he owes us like $20,000. We've been holding things that belong to him until he pays us.
Yeah.
Like, well, technically all this is illegal, but I'll tell you what, when this guy came in, I didn't trust him for a second. He got these squirrely beady eyes and he was saying that he'd walk you through the neighborhood. I'm like, he doesn't live in this area. He lives like 2 hours away, but he knew we were going to be here. So the cop ended up helping us out and saying like, just make sure you park this trailer off the street tonight. And don't get pulled over going home. But yeah, so it was an interesting year, that first year. And I told the same story about what had happened and how we got to this place of having to basically be a new group without this guy. I told that story 300 times that year. I like my eyes would glaze over and I would just tell it. It's like Will Ferrell in Old School.
Yeah, right.
I told it so many times to clients that wanted to know what was going on and friends that wanted to know what was happening. And I remember when basically early 2015, when I wasn't going to have to answer this question anymore, telling the story for basically the last time and feeling very relieved that we had made it through that year and hadn't lost our minds. But so I guess there are some struggles built in.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of the time businesses are a business comes out of a transition of something else.
Yep.
So I was a bartender before I went into this full time. And, you know, we built a bar from scratch with staff from a bunch of different places I'd worked prior, yeah. You know, but you're often just picking and choosing people in an industry and trying to put together a team that'll kill it. And that's the same exact thing that happened with us. So, okay.
So how do you go about, you know, picking the team, if you will, on the band? I feel like that's a loaded question, but.
No. So we had brought in a guitarist in the group that was touring. We were called Parker House in Theory. It was the original group. We had kicked out our original guitarist and we brought in a new guitarist. And then when we started doing weddings, our bassist from Parker House didn't want to do weddings. And our guitarist said, well, there's a bassist I play with all the time and you won't get anyone better than this guy anyway. So we brought him in and he just was killing. He's been with us since. Okay. That's 11 years of gigging with him.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time it's just, you know, we've gigged with enough people. We know who really kills and who doesn't. And also people that are reliable. That's like a huge part of the equation. Yeah. Somebody can be super talented, but if you don't know if they're going to show up or show up on time or, you know, be sober, there are certain things you run into in the musical world that might not necessarily be the same situation in a lot of other businesses. But for the most part, people we brought in over the years have been either meet them on a gig. Our full-time sax player now, I met on a gig where I knew the guitarist and he asked me to sit in and play harmonica with this reggae band. And our sax player, Andrew, was playing. And I said, you know, I actually need sax on a wedding next week because my guy just bailed. And, you know, he's been playing with us ever since. So That's pretty much how we get people in this industry. It's not like we're putting stuff up on monster jobs or something.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And it's an interesting point that I didn't even really think of. There's eight of you. So this isn't just the DJ that's going to show up and do things by themselves. Like, there's eight of you. You guys, it's a legit team that everyone needs to be accountable and do what they need to do for it to go as well, you know, as you want it to go. So that's got to be challenging, I could imagine. Is there a meaning behind Young Love and Thrills, the name?
I hope you never have to go through this, but naming a band is one of the hardest things to do because every name ever is already taken and things that don't make sense are already taken. And I've named a few bands in my life. I have an original project called Echo Kings. That name quite literally came from the name popping in my head and me being shocked that it wasn't a band yet. So, but Young Love and the Thrills, I think it sort of implies that it's going to be more in the wedding world.
Yeah.
You know, kind of has that vibe to it. But we were rebranding during this whole period of nonsense with our old band leader. And I was trying to come up with a name. I was riding with my sound tech at the time and his wife. I said, I don't know. I want to do something with the name The Thrills. And she said, how about Young Love and The Thrills? So that was literally it. And I looked it up on my phone. Name wasn't taken. So I bought the domain right there and then. But yeah, it's really just that I probably had about 100 names on a list and everything I looked up was taken. And yeah, so, but you know, it's got a nice ring to it. And most importantly, no one else has the name. So, because you don't want to be competing with three other bands with the same name. And
oh, no, it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you did 37 weddings that first year. Okay. Well, let's go to 2019. Obviously 2020 is a wash, but what did 2019 look like? How many weddings did you do that year?
On average, it's around 50.
Got it.
It's I think the most we've ever done in one season was 54.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, that sounds like one a week, right? That's what the brain says. But nobody has weddings in February and March, or very few.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get one or two gigs a month, you know, big contract gigs in the off season, which is January through about mid-April.
Yeah.
So really the bulk of the work is May until the end of the year. And November can be a ghost town as well. So a lot of the time it's two weddings a week crammed into about 7 months.
Yeah.
And yeah, on average it's about 50. I think we've done 54 in 2017, but 2019 it was 51 weddings. Last year would have been about the same number, but we had four weddings in 2020.
Wow.
And one of them was pre-pandemic, and then one was a stripped down one with just four guys. And then we had an outdoor gig in the Cape that was super last minute, and one up in New Hampshire that at the time was actually super freaky because it was September. There was a mask mandate and no one at the wedding adhered to it.
So
Planner kept coming up to us and saying, can you make an announcement to tell people that while they're on the dance floor, they have to have masks on? And we said it, you know, probably five times. And eventually she came up again. We're like, no, it's your property. You enforce it. Like, you're making us look like the police. Like, we're we're not going to do it anymore. But the, yeah, that was a strange thing. And it was also a really weird thing to get back to doing weddings after this big, long break and have it sort of pretend like everything was normal.
Yeah.
But like the grandfather of the bride, when he saw everybody, I saw this happen. He was supposed to walk the bride in during, or no, he was supposed to give a speech.
Okay.
And I saw him standing on the outside of the tent, looking at everybody mingling before the main event happened. And I could see in the body language, something's going on. And then I didn't see him for the rest of the night. And the coordinator came over to me and said, oh, like the grandfather, the bride speech isn't happening anymore. He doesn't feel comfortable being here.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, 2020, it's a wild year, obviously, for a lot of reasons. And, as I've done this podcast, it's, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but obviously certain industries, like I talked to you earlier, restaurants and breweries, like they got smacked, the wedding industry got smacked through no fault of your own. And then other industries did really well. I mean, I had somebody that owns Boston Veterinary Clinic on here, and he's like, everyone's adopting dogs. So like my business went crazy. So, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's not like really too many ways you could have pivoted last year because everything you do is in person. So like there's not too many ways that you could have pivoted. So for all intents and purposes, was last year basically just a wash for you and Young Love and the Thrills?
Yeah, pretty much. Like I said, we only did 4 events. It was basically a 50-50 split between postponements to 2021 or even 2022 and just full-on cancellations.
Yeah.
And that was the toughest part. Were the cancellations, because there were about 10 clients within those 25 cancellations that had no willingness to accept a 50% ownership of the loss, right? So it was our contract, very clear language that it's a non-refundable deposit, which I never thought I'd have to enforced. Right. But we had people just saying like, well, this isn't our fault. And I said, well, this isn't our fault either. And I'm like, but we're losing all this money. Like, if you look at it this way, my perspective, you're losing the exact same money that we are.
Right.
Right. Say it's a $10,000 contract. We're not getting the balance and you're not getting the deposit back. And like, nobody's winning here.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
There were a bunch of people that were super cool about it. I had people write and just say, we're so sorry. We have to cancel. We wish we could have you and best of luck, and didn't bring anything up. But I mean, I had people saying, going to take you to court and all this nonsense. It's like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
Right. I think I got to see the true colors of a lot of people, and it was brutal, and it was ugly. And I was on the phone with a bunch of band leaders, and we were just sort of talking like strategic approach to, we know there's going to be more of these conversations and we get on board. And I actually led a charge with about 40 other band leaders to get ahead of the curve when cancellations started to come in and just basically push with having unilateral messaging, like, this is what we can do and this is what we can't. We can push you anywhere later this year. We could push you to any Friday or Sunday next year. There has to be a surcharge for a Saturday next year because we're just going to lose new revenue by just moving you to our limited commodity day, which is Saturdays are just like the sacred.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It really is a commodity, and we just sell. We have a limited stock and we sell that day. But all that was really tough, and I'd never want to do it again. But there's a chance that I might have to. So,
Well, fingers crossed. Let's hope this is behind us. You had mentioned graduation. Maybe that was before we started recording. Do you do solely weddings, or do you guys do any sort of events outside of weddings?
Yeah, done tons of private parties.
So okay.
It's really just a question of like, is the budget there?
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah.
And also what day of the week it is.
Yeah.
So it's very likely we'll get a Friday or Sunday wedding on any weekend. And it's pretty much guaranteed that we'll get a Saturday every weekend, starting beginning of May.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just did a engagement party, and we've done all sorts of things. It's really just, and there's corporate stuff, and especially around the holidays. But
yeah, that's cool.
It's more a question of just if the budget's there. And I think a lot of people, especially when older folks hit me up saying like, oh, it's my, 30th or 40th wedding anniversary and we want to hire a band, I think they get hit with sticker shock because they had a band at their wedding 30 years ago and it was $300. you know.
Right.
I would actually love to do more private parties and less weddings, because weddings are so rigid, and it's kind of like I live in the movie Groundhog Day, like the same day on repeat all the time, just little details change. And, you know, you deal with doing a lot of formalities that get old from our perspective. So parties can be fun because it's just a bit more casual, and usually we have a lot more control over what it is that we're playing to.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I didn't really think about that. And it's true, because if you're having an 8-person band show up, regardless of whether it's a wedding or not, like the budget's still got to be there to make it worth everyone's time.
Yeah.
So, are there any misconceptions about wedding bands in particular?
Oh, there's a bunch.
Like, give me a couple.
So a lot of the time people say we're going with a DJ because they can play more stuff. And that's where I think, but they're not going to, right? Like at a wedding, we try to steer away from playing a ton of the typical stuff, right? We think like, okay, there's, I don't know how many, I'm going to say probably 500-600 wedding bands in the Boston area, right?
Really? Wow.
That's my guess. I could be overshooting it, but there are a couple kind of like wedding band factories here in Boston that have, you know, 30 bands on their roster alone. So, but yeah, I might be wrong, but let's go ahead and just stick to that number, because it's not important other than to make this point, which is that almost all of those bands are going to be playing the same song by Stevie Wonder. They're going to be playing the same song by Earth, Wind & Fire, the same song by Michael Jackson, right? And you go to a wedding that has a DJ and he's spinning those songs. So our approach is like, if everybody's doing that, let's do a bunch of other stuff that people know, but no one's hearing. And it's an immediate, like, it sets us apart. It helps with marketing. It makes the event more unique. It also allows the audience to say, like, why don't I hear people play this more often? So I'm always hoping that we can be playing more and more like deep cuts or just alternative tunes, you know. We don't need to play Sign, Seal, Deliver when everyone else plays it. There's a ton of Stevie songs that are great that nobody's playing or that very few groups are playing. But so there's this big misconception that a DJ has, you know, endless songs that he can play. That is true, but he's not going to play them. Right. So it's just a question of what kind of energy you want.
That's fair.
The second thing is there's a nationwide wedding business. I'm not going to say their name, but if you even Google, you know, wedding bands, they're going to pop up because they spend the most money on advertising, and they're undercutting the market wildly. They're offering like 8-piece bands for $3,500 or $4,000 or something, which means they're paying their guys very little.
But $500, yeah.
But the well, not even, because the operation's going to take half.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that organization, though, they have no steady lineups, right? So if you go to see a showcase and the band you see is not going to be the band you get at your wedding. So this has caused a lot of concern in our market, because now one of the most common questions is, it's the band I saw, you know, at the club or at the wedding last year going to be the same group? And for us, we're a consistent lineup. There are a bunch of bands that are, but there are also operations that are just, all they're promising is, here's an 8-piece band with this instrumentation. But we don't put names on the contract either, because if somebody's sick or, I don't know, subs out to go on tour or something, we're in breach. So but that's been a big cause of concern for a lot of potential clients is, you know, the exact thing I've heard numerous times is, my brother hired this group, and when they showed up that day, it was a completely different group than he was expecting. And there was just like absolute shock in his system. So that's another big worry.
Yeah.
And then I think that also there's a worry that when you hire a band, you're going to get a bunch of misfits that like might be drunk or late or not professional or something.
Like rock and roll.
Yeah. Don't realize that, you know, this part of the operation is just being a professional operation.
Right.
So that's we have very systematic approaches. I think most groups that I'm sort of in a collective with have. And that comes from knowing how to do exactly what we need to do and not get in the way of all the other moving parts.
Yeah.
And, you know, working with the venue and the caterers and all those that we need to help the timing and, you know, do announcements and all that nonsense. I think that there's probably a fear that the couple is going to have to also worry about us. And I sometimes get that, you know, get emails like 2 weeks out, like, hey, we're still good for a wedding, right? Oh yeah. We might not show up. No.
Yeah.
Not what this is at all. But although that has been happening because of COVID, I know a bunch of businesses dissolved, and we had a wedding in May. There was a couple who had a 2020 wedding and then they moved And they reached out a few weeks in advance, said, we just want to make sure you still exist because we just found out that our, I don't know what it was, florist or something, like dissolved their company last year. And
oh, no way.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fair. I mean, it's fair that they have those concerns, but you know, it's just, again, 2020 was just a weird year. How many weddings do you have lined up for 21?
It's a little more this year. It's about 55. And we still have some holds in the end of the year. They will probably go to, well, when you say weddings, I'm actually just thinking contracted events.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Contracted.
We'll have a few corporate events roll in. Those are usually a month or two in advance, and probably some last minute weddings for, you know, November and December, because that's where the last minute couples often go, because there's just less demand for the dates.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that being a last minute couple is a bad thing. It's a good thing for our industry. And also a lot of the time it means that people are going to be a lot more chill about everything, which is nice. Yeah. You know, hey, we're doing this last minute. So, you know, you guys just do what you want to do.
Yeah. You're not going to have too many bridezillas or groomzillas if they are those things.
Yeah. In all the years I've been doing this, so it's been since basically 2014.
Yeah.
Maybe five.
That's
bridezillas
awesome.
/ groomzillas. Yeah. More so it'll be like the wedding coordinator at the venue or something is like a little Gestapo, you know? Like
yeah.
So they can be more difficult or talking to us like we work for them and not with them. But I think that partially because of the approach of our group, like we don't wear matching outfits. We don't have a lot of like the sticky hammy stuff that some of the groups do. And, you know, we have a bunch of sort of less common repertoire that I think we attract a particular group of people that are also hoping to do things a bit differently. So a lot of the time it is sort of less hands-on from them, which is nice.
Yeah, that's fair. Has the industry changed much over that last decade that you've been part of the industry?
Well, a lot of the formalities have gone out the window. You know, everybody used to do the bouquet toss and the garter belt thing.
I always thought those things were weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And like cake cutting and like smushing the icing on each other's noses and
we didn't do
all anything. This stuff. That's really gone out the window to the point where like parent dances are disappearing.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Well, I mean, think about it this way. If you're anywhere in the age range from like 27 to 35, there's going to be a period of your life where you're going to like 5 to 10 weddings a year. All your friends are getting married and you're seeing the same stuff on repeat. And so after a few years of that, when you go to plan your own wedding, you say to your significant other, we don't need this. Like, I don't want to just do what we saw for the past year. And plus, I think people like get burnt on it as guests. You know, you'll watch the first dance, right? And the couple, I don't mean to sound jaded. It's just a really candid observation and therefore feedback on all of it. But you see the couple and the first dance to them is really important. But you look out at the audience, half the people are like looking at their phones or talking to each other quietly and not paying attention. And it's because they've seen it too much. They're shell-shocked from it all, and it doesn't completely callous to it. So we've done a number of events that have just scrapped a lot of that. And I think it's great because you can just have more of a party and, you know, like get down to the part that everybody wants anyway.
Yeah, but, no, that's fair. That's fair. I didn't really think about that. But yeah, I mean, I think 2019, including ours, we had, I don't know, I want to say about 10 weddings, somewhere probably between 8 and 12 weddings. And you're right. It's the same, the formality of it. Everyone's just counting down until, you know, the dance floor opens up and you can just get on the dance floor.
Yeah.
That's fair. That's fair. What do you see for the future of Young Love and the Thrills? Is this a forever thing for you and the band members? You know, you're still young, so we're around the same age, so I hope so.
Yes, Young Love could be a thing forever in the sense that you're right. Weddings, just like babies and pets, I think will always be an industry.
Yeah.
Though, I think that if there's another period of financial hardship, people are going to prioritize how they spend their money.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, because weddings can be such a bank account draining moment for a lot of people. And I mean, this is a terrible thing for me to say for my industry, but like I've said it to my friends. It's like I tell my friends to elope and I tell my clients to hire us because,
yeah, of course.
You know, so we're playing my cousin's wedding in almost exactly 2 weeks. So it's Sunday the 25th. And when he was going to get engaged, I was like, convince your soon to be wife to elope. You guys could put a down payment on the house with the amount of money you're going to spend on this, you know?
Yeah.
But I think that what didn't happen this time around with the pandemic that I feared was going to take place was that everybody especially who experienced financial hardship. They're going to say, like, you know, I knew we were going to have this big wedding, but, you know, things have changed and we want to like have way more of a nest egg or safety net, or you know, we want to invest in something that gives us equity, like buying a home.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually what ended up happening is there's more events and more partying and more of a nightlife than there has been in like 20 years because of the fact that everybody felt clammed up for a year and like they couldn't do anything. So the reality is that this industry probably it'll transform, and you know, I can't predict exactly what that'll mean. Maybe there'll be more hybrid bands with, you know, a DJ spinning while the band is playing, or who knows? It depends on what direction music goes as a whole and what people want to hear. But Young Love could last forever. I'm not going to be involved with it forever. I only got into the role I'm in to deal with a crisis, you know, and that was 7 years ago. And the truth is, at a certain point, it kind of turns into a job no matter what you do. And I could definitely do something that makes me more money and doesn't involve me feeling like a adult chaperone. So, but I think Young Love will probably exist forever. I'm in the very beginning process of early stage of transitioning it to having someone else sort of co-run it with me. And and then I'll just sort of oversee and partner. But it's not something that I want to wake up and be 50 and still, you know, be playing Jesse's Girl.
Yeah, that's fair. That was my next question. Do you think you'll, like, maybe if you stop singing or being live, do you think you'll be always have your hand in it? And if you're out of Young Love, I guess, like, do you ever picture yourself 100% retiring? Do you think you'll always have your hand in something, probably music related, if I had to guess?
Definitely music related.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I do original music. So check us out, or check me out, depending on how you want to think about it. But Echo Kings, we're everywhere. I'm currently scoring a podcast. I got hired to do that.
Nice. So I'm
doing all the music for that. I would prefer to just write and produce and do jingles and just make money, you know, from my home studio. And like, live music is fun, and I would love to do live music. I plan to do live music again in the original setting, which is a much more rewarding and much less lucrative operation. But yes, music and production will, you know, that'll always be something I'm heavily involved in.
Yeah.
But the wedding industry, I'll probably always have at least a finger in the pie, but I'm just moving away from it over a short period of time, or at least trying to transition it where once I'm not a performer, I think that the taxing side of it would feel much less extreme because running the operation is a totally different beast than performing with the operation. So it might end up just being solely a managerial and administrative thing, but yeah, Young Love will probably exist for a long time. And, you know, in 10 years, it'd be a totally different lineup than, you know, it was at its incarnation. So
yeah, that's fair.
But that's how the industry goes. Nobody wants, you know, 40-year-olds singing at their wedding anyway when they're in their 20s. So, you know, you want people that are younger and hipper.
Yeah.
At least that's my perspective.
Yeah, probably. You're probably right. What advice would you give someone that is looking to start their own business? It doesn't have to be, you know, music related, but just in general, like maybe something that you wish somebody told you when you went to start Young Love.
Well, when I started Young Love, I had I basically had a mentor who I paid 5% of my contract fees to, or 5% of the rate. Yeah. And he oversaw and helped me kind of really create a game plan. But planning would be the biggest thing, which is just to have a sort of a larger long-term goal, series of goals, both financial and just business growth.
Yeah.
And to have a game plan in some way, shape, or form that actually facilitates getting there.
Okay.
So I never really set a goal other than I knew I wanted to go. My first year, I wanted to have 30 weddings. And the next year, I knew I wanted to have 50. And I knew that I also wanted to increase the band size, which could not only allow me to increase the contract rates, but in general, drives up the value of the band from the consumer's perspective.
Yeah.
You know, oh, it's a bigger band and they have all these pieces and all these arrangements. Obviously, this price tag makes sense. Not that, I mean, we'd fall right in line with a bunch of other groups that basically offer the same thing, but maybe, you know, stylistically are a bit different. But the main thing would just be, no matter what industry you're in, having goals. And if you're taking out loans or you're going to invest a bunch of your own money into it, setting goals for how long you want until you've recouped your investment and what you hope your ROI is.
Yeah.
So that would be the main thing. My specific experience with this, though, was such like a crisis management thing that I wasn't really thinking much about anything other than like, let's put out this fire.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever is in store for me next, that would very much be my main thing, which is almost like I'd probably build a large PDF packet that I would look through and say, here's my checklist for year one versus year five.
Yeah.
How am I going to get there?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good answer. So, Andy, there's two questions that I've asked every guest on Boston's Best. So I'm going to wrap them up with these two. The first one is, if you could tell your 18-year-old self one thing, what would you tell him?
Oh, my God. It's a toss-up between ask a girl out that I should have. No. You know, 18-year-old Andy was a senior in high school because I was really old for my grade. So I started college when I was 19. I think I would probably tell 18-year-old Andy to wait to go to college.
Yeah.
You know, that there was no rush because I was such a child.
Yeah.
I don't know why we call them college kids or college students. We should call them college children. Have you seen these kids?
Yeah.
I didn't appreciate college, and I was there on a full ride, right? I didn't appreciate it. It just felt like an extension of obligation, right? Yeah. Just an extension of high school and like, I don't even want to go to class today. If I did higher education now in, you know, a field that I'm really interested in, say it was music business, say it was music production or just some just a business degree in general, I'd be so into it because I would recognize what it was, which is an elective process to learn.
Yep.
But that's probably it. Like I just, all 4 years of college, it was such a blur and it was just such a like, let's get through this situation that I feel like it kind of was not what it was supposed to be.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good answer. It's ironic because earlier this morning, I had a meeting with a client of mine whose son is entering his senior year of high school this year or, you know, so September. And he's like, yeah, I think next year, I think he's going to take a gap year. He's like, and I'm all for it. He's like, I want him to travel. I want him to just like, you know, just travel, just figure shit out, see what he likes to do, just enjoy life. And I was like that. I think it's like refreshing to hear that because not too many people, I don't know. It's just,
yeah,
everything's structured. And I couldn't agree more. Like, I think it's a great idea. And I was surprised to hear, you know, maybe because, you know, I think he's like 55, right? So like people at that age, is just like, this is how we do things. But I think it's great that he had the perspective of that. So I think that's a great answer. I wish it was something I did like that. So,
well, and a different way of putting it is, especially if I had ended up going into the film industry, I was working on films in New York as a high school kid, you know, I'm just like production assistant stuff and art department work. And a lot of the guys on the crew, especially the older guys, two specific cinematographers said, don't go to college. Just like spend the same amount of money you would on living in LA or staying here in New York.
Right.
And get a really good internship working with somebody that you want to end up sort of mirroring professionally. And that'll go much further than you're basically just delaying your career by 4 years. And I went to performing arts school in Manhattan that's known as the Fame School and had health class with Nicki Minaj. But, you know, the actors in my school, a bunch of them just went right into, you know, auditioning and trying to get roles right out of high school and skipped college. And they're the ones that have careers right now.
Yep.
You know, so that could be sort of the alternative thing I'd say to myself. If I had ended up wanting to work full time in the film industry, just skip college and, you know, go intern with Conrad Hall or something.
Yeah.
But
I agree with you. It's funny you just mentioned what you did. So a guy I went to high school with, graduated with, he was a big dancer, like huge dancer. I had no idea how good of a like dancer he was. He moved out to LA right after high school. We graduated in 02, 04. He was in a movie. Like and he was touring with he toured with Michael Jackson. He toured with Madonna. And like this kid is like 19, 20 years old and he's touring with all these people. Like good. And he's big time now. Like, he's got his own studio out in LA. Like he's pretty big, but it's wild to see that. And that's what he did. Think about it. $50,000 a year nowadays to go to school. Like imagine what you could do with $120,000, $200,000 if you're investing it when you're 18. I mean, wisely, I guess, you know, not going to give an 18-year-old kid $150,000, but.
Well, no, but I had this conversation a couple of years ago with a girl who's in high school, like a family friend at a wedding that I was a guest at.
Yeah.
And she was saying, I want to be an actress. And I gave her this advice. I said, are your parents going to pay for your college? Yeah. I was like, then you should skip college and say, you know, it's going to cost me $30,000 a year to live in LA while I audition full time. But like, you know, the people that are super huge in a ton of industries, especially entertainment, mm-hmm. they've been in it forever.
Yeah. You know,
Ryan Gosling was in the Mickey Mouse Club when he was 12.
Right. Yeah.
Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera and Britney Spears.
Britney Spears. Yeah.
You know, Zac Efron's been in stuff since he was a little kid. Like people, the sooner you get into mostly entertainment, you know, the more it's going to help, the more connections you're going to have. But I even think in the world of finance or a specific trade, that if you landed a 2-year internship that you're not making any money, but you're working with somebody super influential, it's going to do more than going to college because everybody's going to college. So it's like now it doesn't mean anything. You got to go to grad school.
So
having a bachelor's degree is essentially just like having a high school diploma at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm in finance. I wish I got into this industry when I was in my early 20s. You know, it's ridiculously hard the first few years as it is, but if you're 22 and you're just, you know, you got this mentor and you're interning with somebody who's successful in the business and they're essentially taking you under their wings, like to get into that type of business in your early to mid 20s, you're good. Like you're going to be in such good shape in your mid 30s. It's not even funny.
And additionally, that usually is going to be the thing that's opening doors for you anyway. Yep. You might get a job offer out of it, but I don't even want to think about this question anymore because it makes me mad that I can't tell 18-year-old.
I know. We just went on like this 10-minute tangent, but I we're on the same page. I agree with you. So we'll get over. We'll get past that. Last question that I've asked every guest on Boston's Best is: everyone has a varying depiction of what success looks like to them. So how do you define success?
Well, okay, so we live in arguably the most Western country of the Western world, right? How we prioritize success is so much rooted in financial success and stability. And so much of maybe Japan is even more career oriented, you know, South Korea, maybe there are a few countries that are Germany, they can be absolutely nuts about, you know, having like a 12-year-old kid know what they're going to do for the rest of their life and, you know, follow that to the T. But I think Americans are really rooted in what we do and how it reflects who we are. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, professionally, what you do should be the sole thing that defines your adulthood, but it seems to be so often that it is. You know, if you were, for example, to have a conversation, go to a high school reunion, which would be my 20th this year if my school did things like that. So much of what people will be talking about is their professional laurels for the past 20 years.
Yeah.
And I think that success is often just too much about like what your net worth is and, you know, what you've done and if you're recognized in whatever field you're in. But as cliche as it sounds, I actually think success is finding a balance between feeling comfortable, you know, not having a ton of worry about your current state and the future, and enjoying what you do, but not having it entirely own you.
Yeah.
And just some sort of work-life balance. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what I think when I'm an old man and I'm dying, if I think that I had a successful life. It's a tough question because you can get into spiritual stuff here. You can get into, you know, like what real happiness is and fulfillment. And I don't think that most people, especially people that run their own businesses, who we all end up getting owned by it a lot of the time, you know, and you always feel guilty when you're not working because, you know, you could be growing things more or, you know, making more money or whatever, but that's not happiness. No. That's just like you build your own prison and then you live in it to a degree. So there's that total BS thing that's been shared as a meme and people have it on their office walls, which is like when you find something you love, you never work a day in your life. That is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like no matter what you do, you end up working. And I think when it's something you really care about, you work so much harder than something where when you clock out, you're not thinking about it till the next time you're there.
All day.
So I don't know. I don't know what I think success looks like. But for me, as a like at my core, I'm a creative personality. If what I do is rooted in creativity and that can generate you know, a decent income from me, that would probably be the closest thing to professional success.
Yeah.
And to a certain degree, I guess I'm already there, but in a certain way, I don't think I am at all. So, which is why the pandemic, by the way, was a really good thing for me in a bunch of ways, because 100%. I got to focus on original music again, and I had the time, and I, you know, I overhauled my house to have this master studio that used to be the master bedroom, and just really focus on being able to do this and do it as efficiently as possible with a real setup. But that came out of the desire to say, like, you know, when I play a wedding, it just escapes into the ethers.
Yeah.
And when I, you know, record and release something, it exists forever.
Yeah.
And, you know, you leave something behind that way. So I'm still figuring it out.
I mean, I think that's a great answer, man. Like a couple things that you would say that you brought up, like feeling guilty. Like now I work predominantly from home. Everyone got forced to get used to Zoom. I've had one in-person client. I have one client that I've had in-person meetings of, but she's in her 70s and doesn't have a camera on a computer. So she literally can't do Zoom. So we've met in person like three times over the last year. And now the emails are always up. If I'm not working, I get anxiety that I need to be doing something to grow my practice bigger. And like this morning, I went to a yoga class at 8:30 in the morning. So really like from 8:15 to say like 10 o'clock, you know, come home and shower, I wasn't working, but I was up at 4 o'clock this morning working like 3 hours prior, but I still felt guilty that emails are coming in and I just missed like an hour's worth of emails. And it's just like that balance is tough. The pros of the efficiency in the Zoom world are very high. There's a lot of them, but the cons to it is that feeling that I always need to be working. Like all I do is think about, oh, I should have said this, or I should have done that, or I could have been doing this and I didn't. On the positive side, I'm getting better at it. Like even just with COVID, my wife and I take walks around our neighborhood like a couple times a day. We never did that. And it's just like even having that 20-minute walk around the neighborhood is just, it's just relaxing. It's like, I don't know, COVID, for all the negatives that came with it, some of the positives where you realize what's important. And, you know, it just kind of, it took me back a little bit because I was just in the hustle and bustle working in the city. Now it just kind of slowed me as much as I could slow down. I'm usually go, 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 but it slowed me down just enough where like, I appreciate certain things now that I didn't, you know? So, well, Andy, it was awesome having you on. I'm excited to promote Young Love and the Thrills on Boston's Best when this episode comes out. So thanks for the time, man.
Yeah. I look forward to getting that water bottle and t-shirt from you.
you got
express
it.
Express mailed.
You will get one,
by the way.
I promise you will get one. All right, man. I'll catch you later.
All right. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to say thank you for checking out my podcast. I really do appreciate the love I've received for this show. I believe now more than ever, any exposure to local businesses is great for them to receive, and I'm trying to do my part. If you are a local business owner or someone you know in the Boston area that would like to be featured on the podcast, please email me at bostonsbestpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode, please follow this podcast. It's available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Instagram with the handle @Boston's Best_podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/Boston's Best Podcast. Again, I truly appreciate the great feedback for this show, and stay tuned for each new episode every Friday at 8 a.m. Take care.